This is LabCast, insights and ideas for the expansion stage senior manager, hosted by OpenView Labs.
If you're an expansion stage technology company, chances are that you've heard of Rackspace, the San Antonio-based company that's a service leader in cloud computing. You're probably also familiar with OpenStack, the open source cloud platform they founded. But did you know that beyond their technology, there's another really interesting aspect to Rackspace that's equally important? It's their company culture. Rackspace stands out as a company that's committed to creating a great culture for its employees, which they refer to as Rackers. They proudly state on their website how they don't want Rackers to have a job, they want them to have a life. That declaration plays out in a lot of interesting ways at Rackspace, one of which that's particularly striking is their employee-run blog, RackerTalent.com. Visit it and you can read what Rackspace's employees are up to right now, what challenges they face, or even what their biggest gripe is about the company. It's essentially a completely transparent portal into the company that gives prospective employees the opportunity to assess what working there is like. And did I mention that it's employee-run? No HR control? Here's how HR expert William Tincup describes the benefits of creating such a company blog.
Well, it creates a filter. And the filter is it's real and authentic, and it's a way for you to fall in love with the firm or be repulsed by the firm, and equally are important. Both approaches are important.
Why, you might ask? Because it helps to ensure that the people who apply to work at Rackspace are going to be a good cultural fit for the company. I'm Kevin Kane, and in this week's LabCast, I'm joined by William Tincup to talk about the importance of hiring for cultural fit and why it often, if not always, trumps hiring someone for their skills. Hey, William. Thanks for joining me on LabCast today. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well, thanks. I know this is one of several podcasts you did today, so I appreciate your taking the time.
Yeah, it's Podcast Thursday, evidently.
Apparently. So for the purposes of our podcast today, we're actually talking about this whole idea of hiring for cultural fit versus hiring for skill set. You know, this is something that I think is a very popular topic, something I've certainly heard a lot about and read about lately. And I'm curious to hear from you, you know, what are some of the advantages of hiring for a cultural fit over a skill set and vice versa? Sort of what's the business case for doing one versus the other?
Yeah, I think if you look at it like everything that happens in recruiting. So if we take talent acquisition and recruiting, and we say the line of demarcation is onboarding, everything that happens prior to that, they're candidates, and they're not employees yet. They're suspects. They're candidates. They're people of interest. They can be a lot of, you can call it a talent pool. You can call it whatever you want. But at the point when you hire them, they become then employees. The goal of HR, great HR, is to help the firm retain the most valuable employees. So all employees are valuable, check, we all agree. But there within that is another group of employees, if you will, or a subclass of that, of high potentials. These are the people that add the most value to your firm. And as an HR pro, your job is real simple. What do we have to do to keep those people? So I think if you start with the end game in mind, it helps you then figure out what we should be doing out prior to onboarding. And so why does culture matter? Skills matter? Like, why does any of this stuff matter? It's because the end game is to retain the best talent. It's a game of who has the best talent wins, period. And so culture is a surrogate in some ways that you can't really teach culture. You basically, it has to be deeply woven into you. You have to appreciate it. You have to then fall in love with it and be a part of it and then shape the new culture with you in it as opposed to not in it. But truthfully, skills can be taught. If you don't have the skill, whatever that skill is, well, we can teach you the skill. But we can't teach you to play well with others, or we can't teach you, depending on what is the culture. Let's say your culture is one that's a work hard, play hard, and you're going to go full throttle, but you're going to work 80 hours a week, but you're going to party together on the weekends. Again, no value judgments, but that's your culture, let's say. Well, I can't teach you that. I can't teach you to love that and feel like that's a part of your being. I can teach you, however, how to be a great accountant, how to be a great account executive, or how to sell, or how to be a great marketer. I can teach you all of that stuff. So I think skills are important, by the way. I mean, I don't want to diminish, like, okay, the unskilled versus the skilled. Skills are important. culture is more important than skills.
Okay, but let's deconstruct that a little bit further. So I can totally see where you're coming from at an entry level or even someone sort of in the early years of the career. What about further down the road? Is there a certain time period where you don't get the same return? So, for example, if I'm looking for a CMO or I'm looking for the head of sales, there's nobody's going to come in and teach that person. You're looking for that person to be the leader. You're looking for them to have the skill set. And so at that point, you know, it's a little bit different than if you're getting someone who's 1 or 2 years out of college and you can teach them everything. You know, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think skills go up, but culture goes up as well. And so, you know, it's not like skills at one point outpace the importance of culture fit. Again, if they're truly in those both examples, and you're going to want those people to be adding the most valuable. So you want the most talented person, but the most talented person in the world doesn't matter if they only stay for 30 days. So you still got to retain them. The game is retention. Everything that we do in recruiting, the end game is how do we retain them? And so all of these pieces work together, compensation and succession and rewards and performance and feedback. All of it is a tapestry that we weave with the goal of retaining the most talented individuals in the firm. And so culture fit, if we could, you know, think of it like this. Let's say Jimmy is really talented. In fact, he's just groundbreaking talented, but he's not going to stay at the firm. Like he's there to get to his next thing. So is he in that particular situation? Do we recruit him and with the intent of knowing that he's going to leave, or do we recruit someone that maybe is a little less talented but will stay and be a major contributor and a major part of our culture?
Well, okay, that's a fair point. What role, kind of switching gears a little bit, does technology have to play in all of this? I mean, we're now in an environment where there's far more people working remotely, you know, doing things digitally and online, where you're not interacting on the same level on an individual basis. You're working from your home office in Tucson, Arizona, and your parent company is maybe in, I don't know, Philadelphia. Does the cultural fit become a little bit less important in those circumstances?
Well, let's separate, because I think that actually I'll probably have a counterintuitive take on culture in the cloud. Let's talk about value first. If you're adding value remotely, you're adding value. Period, end of story. You know, it's not like you have to be within the four walls to add value. And so you can be anywhere, and you can work in any way, shape, or form that you want to, part-time, full-time, all of that stuff can be distributed, etc. If we're talking about value, check. Culture, however, I think it's very difficult to have virtual culture. I think it can be done, and I think there are some examples of it being done. I think it's very difficult to do unless you're kind of brought up that way. There's a market research firm in Denver that they've never had an office, ever. Like, they've never had an office and will never have an office. They get together in person once every quarter, and they all come together from wherever they are in the world. They all get in one place, and the culture of the firm is a part of it, a spoke of it, if you will, is being virtual. But a lot of the real culture that happens when they're in person. So it's challenging to people like you and to people like me that culture in the cloud or virtual culture, I think you can get some aspects of a company culture. But I think if you are in that example working in Tucson, I don't think you get the full brunt of a company's culture in any way, shape, or form by being remote. I think you still add value. So I've separated the two in my mind, my little weasel brain. I've kind of separated the two that you can add value, check. I don't know if you can get the full experience of a company culture if you're working remotely.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. So let's say you aren't working remotely and you are, in fact, part of a company, a physical company, bricks and mortar. What advice do you have for recruiters and for hiring managers to help screen for cultural fit? I mean, it's somewhat subjective, I would say. And so, and I imagine people's perception of what a company culture is can vary internally. Maybe it's not supposed to, but I'm sure that it does. What advice do you give to those people to help them screen candidates?
Well, it's going to be a little counterintuitive, but I'm a big fan of the negative sale. So I actively, when I sell things, I actively tell people how they shouldn't buy this, and how that basically I put all of the what is typically your objection response stuff. I put all that stuff forward. And I think what happens to us in HR and recruiting is we want to tell the glorious story of how everything's perfect behind the veil.
Right.
And it happens to all of us. I mean, you know, I can say that I've fallen victim to this. When I really want to recruit somebody and I've gotten desperate and I just need, you know, somebody in the chair, and I'll tell them whatever story they need to hear to get them in the box. The problem with that strategy is they're going to experience the bad things. And I think that's where you create that's where you erode credibility, and that's where it comes back to bite you, is that what you should do is take the worst parts of the company and all the failed bits, the terrible decisions, the employees that are terrible, and all of those things, and tell those stories first. So here's the deal. Inside of our company, let me tell you about everything that's really messed up about our company. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you all that. And if you can get through that and still be intrigued about what we do, then there's no shock at all. There's no, 6 months later, man, you sold me a bill of goods that was terrible. You told me that my boss was going to be fantastic, and you know he's a caustic bastard. I can't work. You know what I mean? Like that's what we do in HR and recruiting. We tell them all the positives and hide all the negatives. So I think one of the things, and you know what, Glassdoor. And other people are getting more and more savvy. Candidates are getting more and more savvy about finding that stuff out, and they feel like we're lying to them. So let's take all that away by saying, hey, listen, look at our Glassdoor ranking. You know, okay, you know, we're right now we're at a 4. We should be at a 5. Well, you know what? Well, here's the reason we're at a 4. We went through the dip. We made some terrible decisions. We didn't communicate with employees. We fixed that. Like have it as a part of the dialogue, rather than hoping that they don't find it out.
Right. Well, I think that's a pretty straightforward approach, probably one that a lot of people are a little bit uncomfortable with, but it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. What I wanted to ask you, though, is, you know, do you think there are instances where companies take this idea of screening too far? You know, we talked a little bit about Rackspace in the introduction and how they're letting employees blog and kind of tell all. I know Zappos is a company that makes their first interview cultural fit screening exclusively. You know, is there a point at which you can kind of overdo it?
Yeah, and I'm sure we've yes. So is there a point? Yeah, there's got to be a point. I don't know if we know what that point is, because I don't know if we've tried everything. If you're repulsing, I mean, let's take it as an aperture. You know, so if the audience understands the concept of aperture, where we open it up and let light in, if screening is there and we can't get somebody to take the position, then something's wrong with the position or wrong with our approach to fill the position. So I think that all this is great, but if you can't get somebody in the job, then everything needs to be looked at that point. And if you're having trouble, I mean, if you look at recruiting, then placement, and you're looking at kind of the retention rates of those that you recruit, if it's falling off the wheels, if the wheels are falling off the car later in the process where we're recruiting them, it looks like we're doing a really good job of telling the story, we're recruiting them, but we can't keep them, then something's equally broken. And so what's broken there? Are we telling the wrong story, or are we not scaring them enough? Are we not doing enough out here? Because the game, for me at least, the game is keeping the most valuable talent.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. Well, William, I wanted to just thank you very much for joining us today. And before I let you go, just wanted to ask you where our listeners can get in touch with you if they want to follow up.
Sure. The easiest thing is Twitter, probably, at William Tincup. So my last name is kind of funny, but it's just TINCUP, and just put William in front of it, and you'll be able, from there, from the Twitters, you'll be able to find whatever else is relevant to you.
Perfect. Well, William, thanks again. Really appreciate having you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Take care.